Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the Queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's great to have you with us on this sunny but still very, very cold 29 degrees Friday morning. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola Saturdays at 4 o'clock here on this station, and also the host of the Pensacola Movie Club Thursday nights. They watch a film and talk about it. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So the monkey is not Monkey Man with Dev Patel, and not the other movie about the British pop star played by a CGI monkey, but something else entirely.
Yeah, that was Better Man, I believe, was the name of that movie.
Thank you. Okay,
I may be wrong about that. It's something like that. But yeah, no, this is just called The Monkey, and this is the latest film by Oz Perkins, who is turning out to be one of our best horror writer directors right now. He is the son of Anthony Perkins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's made a number of really good movies, including Long Legs last year and Gretel and Hansel and The Black Coat's Daughter. He is, you know, very much an up-and-coming young horror director, and this is an adaptation of a Stephen King short story that came out in the early 1980s. Now, you ask me, Stephen King movie adaptations, there's a few hits and an awful lot of misses.
Sure.
This is a hit.
Oh,
this
great.
Is one of my favorite Stephen King adaptations I've seen yet. This movie is a lot of fun. It is very much a very dark horror comedy. You will laugh a lot at this movie, but it is gory and not for the faint of heart.
I gotcha.
That way.
Okay.
Just really great cast led by Theo James, but you know, also Adam Scott in a small role, Tatiana Maslany. Like I said, it's really funny and really dark, and like the kills are very gory, but there you also laugh at every single one of them.
Well, you've got me very intrigued, because that's usually the kind of movie that I will love, although I'd have to watch it without my wife because she hates the gore. So we'll see. Also,
yeah, I adore this movie. I can't wait.
Weird little note. I don't know if we have time to get into it, but you made me think of something. Books made into movies often flop. Short stories, especially science fiction short stories made into movies, seem to do really, really well. Like, they often are producing some of the best movies. I don't know. It's just a weird thing you made me think of. I'd never thought of too much before.
Well, I think some of the best King adaptations have been short story adaptations,
right,
too. I mean,
right.
Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption. You know, a number of the better Stephen King adaptations have been adaptations of short stories rather than of actual novels.
Agreed. The Unbreakable Boy is the other new one out this week.
Yeah. So, we've had this conversation before. You know, when a movie's been sitting on the shelf for 5 years,
yeah,
which this has, you know, this is called The Unbreakable Boy, and the titular Unbreakable Boy is now almost old enough to vote. So, yeah, this movie was made when this child was 12. He's 17 now.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. It's getting not horrible reviews, but not great reviews, running around 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is based on a true story about a young boy who is both on the autism spectrum and has brittle bone disease.
Okay.
And it's about his father, who's played by Zachary Levi in this movie, and his quest to make sure he has a happy life. So, you know, kind of like one of those inspirational kinds of stories. Not 100% sure this is faith-based, although Levi has been in a lot of faith-based stuff lately, so it wouldn't surprise me if that's an element here. You know.
Just like not that, a big – okay. If something sits for 5 years, it usually sits for a reason, so I get that analysis. What are you guys going to watch next week?
Not sure yet. There's not a whole lot of wide releases next week, so we will have to wait and see. As soon as we know, we will put that up on the Facebook group.
Outstanding. By the way, congratulations on another very successful Pensacon. Had a blast, always do. Love to see all the people doing their cosplay, and got to meet Michael Biehn and, you know, lots of stars there. So thank you for your contribution to that. And next year, the date is?
next year, February 20th through 22nd of 2026. We've already announced the first few guests, including we're very excited to have Paul Reiser coming.
Good.
You know, he has not done a whole lot of these conventions, and I think people are going to be really excited to meet him. Of course, you know, was also in Aliens as Michael Biehn was, but Mad About You and My Two Dads and The Boys and Stranger Things, just an incredible career. So I'm looking forward to having him. And big Lost Boys reunion next year.
Oh, cool.
Ponch and John from Chips coming.
Nice.
We've already got a good lineup starting to form.
Excellent. I'd love to talk to Burke from Aliens and scold him for his bad decision making. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio. And, of course, the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow him on Facebook. Thanks for the time, sir. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Even 9 Mile, I see no backups there. Starting to see a little bit of congestion on Highway 90 right through the Pea Ridge area. But other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
What's in this week's election denial kits? I'll tell you next in the Transgressors Memorial Service.
Are you feeling tired, slower, or achier than you used to? You might think it's just age, but it could be low testosterone. At Wave Men's Health, they've helped thousands of men who didn't realize their symptoms were caused by declining testosterone levels, a problem that's becoming a new norm in American men. Wave Men's Health refuses to accept this new normal. They're committed to restoring testosterone to healthy levels so you can feel like yourself again, whether at home, in the gym, at work, or in the bedroom. For years, their providers have delivered testosterone therapy tailored to each man's needs. No one-size-fits-all solutions, just real science-backed results delivered by discreet local experts. Imagine more energy, sharper focus, and newfound confidence. A same-day testosterone check and consultation is just $99. Call 850-266-7020 or visit WaveMensHealth.com today. Your prime years aren't over. They're just waiting to be unleashed. Wave Men's Health. Making it happen.
At Pennair Credit Union, we know that road trips don't start by driving into the sunset. A day at the beach doesn't begin with packing the car. Even car shopping doesn't really start at the dealership. Your new car journey begins with an auto loan pre-approval from Pennair Credit Union. Because at Pennair, auto financing is easy. And when you get pre-approval before you shop, you'll be ready to hit the road when you find the perfect car. Get started at Pennair.org/car loan. Whether it's new, used, or refinanced, vehicle loans from Pennair Credit Union fit you perfectly. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The King invites you to the 24th Annual Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair, Wild West Roundup, Pirate Fest. This weekend and next weekend at Five Flags Speedway. Come out, enjoy some historic fun. Eat, drink, and be merry while you are entertained by jousting knights, wizards, fire breathers, sword fights, pirates, gypsy dancers, cowboy shootouts, falconry, and much more. Step back in time at the Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair, February 22nd and 23rd, and March 1st and 2nd, Five Flags Speedway, Pine Forest Road, Pensacola. Visit gcrf.us.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Groundhog Day, or more specifically, the cruel, exploitative, and speciesist spectacle of using a poor, defenseless groundhog as a weather-predicting toy for human entertainment. That's right, the brave thought leaders of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals recently sent a sternly worded missive to the president of the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club, begging the top-hatted and bearded old men of Gobbler's Knob to abandon their 139-year-old tradition and come into the brave new world of animal liberation by simply leaving Phil alone on February 2nd, 2026 and beyond. As Ingrid Newkirk, PETA president, or Minister of First Among Equals, as they like to call her, wrote, "Groundhogs are shy prey animals who, when allowed, actively avoid humans. Yet year after year, Phil is transported to Gobbler's Knob, whisked on a stage, and subjected to a noisy announcer, screaming crowds and flashing lights against all his natural instincts. As the one who is more than equal than others, all this nonsense and abuse just to make Phil the town's once-a-year fake meteorologist is a terrible abuse of human power." But PETA understands that the people want a spectacle, And so they propose using a weather reveal cake. Instead of mistreating the poor Marmota Monax in its ridiculous display of wintry tomfoolery, instead of pretending the flat furry rodent cares about his shadow, PETA suggests a vegan cake with either a blue interior for 6 more weeks of winter or pink indicating an early spring. As Newkirk writes, quote, "More and more people realize that every animal is an individual with their own interests, needs, and personalities, as well as being able to feel pain, fear, joy, and love." And she urges the bearded ones to treat Phil with this love as the individual he is, instead of using him as a fake, furry, frozen precipitation prognosticator. And while we're at it, wouldn't it be nice if we'd stop not only imposing our human need for spectacle upon him, but also start calling him by his actual name, which, of course, is not Phil. Nor is there any correct name in the completely fabricated and imaginary language of Groundhog Ease. Instead, Phil's actual name in the native tongue of the Western Pennsylvania woodchuck is actually click, click, Wooster, clink, knock, knock. Forgive my heavy southern accent, I only recently began speaking the language. So let us all stop pretending that there is anything civilized about disturbing a poor groundhog by banging on his fake tree home with an acacia stick and then holding him aloft like some primitive animal sacrifice or single-handed trophy. Let us put away our tuxedos, top hats, and suspension of disbelief about the age of Phil and his shadow-detecting prowess. Let us instead honor the poor squirrel cousin and slice open a weather reveal cake for kindness, justice, and Pennsylvania love. Unshackle the groundhog and let the equality of the animal kingdom guide us. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the term domestic beer for brands such as Coors, Miller, Michelob, and Budweiser. In case you've not heard, Brendan Whitworth, the man with the whitest name in North America, and chief executive officer of Anheuser-Busch, makers of Bud Light, the winner of the 2023 award for most inclusive adult beverage, for its catastrophically costly outreach campaign involving transgender superstar Dylan Mulvaney, recently announced to its distributors and partners a campaign to replace the term domestic beer with the term American beer. Recognizing that the long-standing words domestic and import for beer types makes beers with German, Dutch, Australian, Mexican, and even Canadian provenance sound slightly exotic, while also making American beer sound dull and mundane in contrast, Whitworth, in his letter entitled A Call for American Beers, encouraged marketing experts to instead use the term American for the beers of the good old USA. As he wrote, America is not necessarily an incorrect adjective to use, it just doesn't fully capture the spirit and passion that's so intrinsic to the American beer industry and its brands, and falls short of capturing the pride we should all take in products made right here in this great country. Now, yes, dear Otherin, normally we would oppose anything that promotes this nation or even vaguely feels patriotic. And although we are uncomfortable with the effort to elevate anything American over anything global in general, we celebrate this move precisely because it is the changing of language for the sake of the changing of language, which we always embrace. Making people unlearn time-tested words and memorize new terminology is the seventh sacrament of our order, even when it's being done to elevate one kind of mediocre beer over another. It's worth supporting. Also, we should note that Anheuser-Busch did stop short of requesting marketers shift away from using the term import for non-American beers, a choice we assume was deliberate. After all, they could have requested people start using derogatory terms such as foreign beer or non-native beer or even immigrant beer, which for obvious reasons we would not have accepted. Now, to us, it seems as if the makers of the King of Beers Budweiser and the second cousin twice removed of beers Bud Light are simply trying anything they can to recover from the losses they suffered in 2023. So raise a glass of American beer. Celebrate your Yuengling, your Sam Adams, your Pabst Blue Ribbon, your Keystone, or even your Natty Light, if you must, and never ask for a domestic beer again. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to offer our most sincere praise for the legislature of the great state of Washington, and especially Representatives Strom Peterson, Julia Reed, and Greg Nance, for introducing a bill calling for a comprehensive redesign of the state flag, specifically to remove the picture of President George Washington from the flag of the state of Washington. As the bill observes, the flag features a detailed portrait of George Washington, making it overly complex and difficult to reproduce, which is a violation of key flag design principles that prioritize simplicity. Additionally, while George Washington is an important national figure, he has limited historical connection to the state itself. This makes his image less meaningful as a symbol for the state. End quote. We stand here in non-silent but gushing awe of the boldness of the leaders of Washington for openly calling to abandon the namesake himself as a picture on their flag. which, in case you're not familiar, is basically old George's face in a blue and yellow circle on a green background. Now, although nothing in the bill officially refers to the various immoralities and unacceptabilities associated with George Washington himself, we assume canceling him is a key motive behind the bill. They don't call it the People's Republic of Washington because it's overly fond of the Founding Fathers, after all. The only small criticism we have for these legislators is that they really should have gone all the way in advocating for a full separation from the racism and slave-owning legacy of the first president by calling to change the name of Washington State entirely, which, of course, would also have entailed redesigning the flag. Moreover, they've been really devoted to our cause of historical holy revisionism, and they could have called on Congress to name the U.S. Capitol something other than Washington, D.C., to abandon the imprint on the quarter, to redesign the $1 bill, and to demolish that horridly phallic monument protruding from the top of the National Mall. But baby steps are still worth recognizing. Meanwhile, if Washington State is going to de-Washingtonize their flag in a comprehensive and competitive design process, we have some suggestions for improvements. Of course, we always want to maximize inclusivity for all the people of the holy acronym string. And since we noticed that not a single U.S. state has a rainbow on their flag, what a great opportunity to be the first LGBTQ2SIA square root of negative 5 inclusive state in the union. They could literally become the first official state of the rainbow people. Now, if they want to emphasize something more focused on, say, economic justice rather than sexual justice, they could go with the traditional equality red of China and Russia, perhaps with a yellow hammer or sickle or bong for emphasis. Perhaps a black fist of protest for racial justice, but I digress. I'm sure once they rid themselves of the picture of the man for whom the state is named, they will surely find a wonderful pictographic representation of their core values to fly atop the dome in Olympia. So kudos to you, Washington State, for being as anti-Washington as you can, for at least for now. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
As you depart today, please feel free to pick up one of this week's Presidential Transition Denial Kits. Today's featured distraction from reality device is a President Joe Biden pull string doll, which declares classic Bidenisms such as, "I'm being serious," "No joke," "Come on, man," "I'm Jill Biden's husband," and "Corn Pop was a bad dude." These audio reminders of the glory days of the last 4 years are sure to make you feel seen and safe. This week's denial kits also include various bumper stickers with powerful phrases such as, "Don't blame me, I voted for her twice," "I still believe in the Constitution, even if I've never read it," and my personal favorite, "Not my Gulf of America." We will have more reality-denying, wounded-feelings-affirming swag for you again next week, I promise. Only 47 months to go, my friends.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
Traffic on the Fives from John Pickens. John?
I want my pull string doll.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
That's right. Let's see here. No accidents to let you know about right now. It looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Seeing some minor delays as you roll on 9 Mile Road right in front of Hillcrest Baptist Church there. But other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Five.
Thanks so much, John. Into the newsroom now. We're our final time. We're going to hear from Steve Taylor sitting in for David Wayne. Steve, thank you so much for doing the news this morning and all week long. I appreciate it.
Well, anytime. In the news, a federal judge is ordering the Trump administration to comply with an order to unfreeze foreign aid. The U.S. District Judge issued the order on yesterday, but he didn't hold the administration in contempt for skirting the directive. The administration claims the order gave them legal room to leave funding frozen while they review the contracts one by one. A brutal winter storm turned roads into icy traps across the heartland, dumping snow and ice on cities like Tulsa, Memphis, and Nashville, leading to dozens of crashes, including one in Oklahoma that left the drivers shell-shocked and also sticker-shocked. A semi-truck carrying a load of eggs flipped on the slick highway, spilling the fragile and very expensive cargo at a time when egg prices are already soaring. And that's what's happening.
Wow, talk about a major economic tragedy. Yeah,
people were scrambling for that one.
They were scrambling for it, yeah. Well done. All right, thanks, Steve. Fishing for the laugh, I got it. Oh, I found my new favorite website of the day, a Facebook page of the day. I had a friend who's got a wicked sense of humor. He sent me an invite to this Facebook group. The name of the Facebook group is The Same Photo of Chief O'Brien Every Day. You remember Chief O'Brien from Star Trek The Next Generation? The
yes.
Kind of curly-haired guy in the, you know, the gold outfit, basically? It is, in fact, every single day they post the same exact picture of Chief O'Brien every single day, day after day, day after day. This Facebook group has 34,000 likes, 37,000 followers. The pictures get shared between 10 and 60 times per day. And people make comments like, this is the content I'm looking for on the internet. Most informative page I've seen. It's hilarious. So go there. I have it on my own personal page. If you want to go, the same photo of Chief O'Brien every day. It's... I can't tell you why it's hilarious, but it really is. The Wrap comes up next.
I'm Therese Crowley. After pulling an all-nighter, the Senate managed to pass its version of a Trump budget blueprint, focusing on border security, energy, and the military. Different from the one big beautiful bill in the House the president prefers, the House tackles its version next week. Elon Musk on stage with a chainsaw, a surprise gift from Argentina's president at the conservative CPAC convention, talking about what Doge cost cutters are finding.
We just did like a check the database on Social Security. Like it says, how many alive Americans eligible for Social Security are there? And according to the database, it's over 400 million. And we're like, wait a second.
Israel's prime minister says Hamas will pay for this. The kidnapped hostage they returned in a coffin was not Cherie Bibas, the mother of two dead toddlers handed over. IDF forensics now show Hamas murdered the babies with their bare hands. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 right now. 31 degrees and sunny. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Representative Michelle Salzman filed a bill to lower the legal age to purchase a rifle or long guns in Florida from 21 to 18. HB 759 would repeal the age restriction implemented in 2018, which raised the minimum age for purchasing rifles and long guns from 18 to 21. Representative Salzman argues that this current law unfairly restricts the Second Amendment rights of responsible young adults. Salzman emphasized her bill does not change other existing firearm regulations or background check requirements. She said it simply allows young adults to exercise their constitutional rights fully. Escambia County confirmed the federal government has canceled their contract with the local lifeguards on Johnson, Langdon, and Opal beaches. Escambia Public Safety Director Eric Gilmore told News Radio yesterday that lifeguard service will be limited.
So this year, we will not have our lifeguards at Gulf Islands because they pay for our manpower. It's an extra cost on me if I had to put lifeguards out there. And what our budget for the county includes is Casino Beach, Whitewater Beach, and we've now included Perdita Key. So we will be out there at those locations that we typically cover in the counties responsible for.
But Johnson Beach will not be protected.
Johnson Beach has a lot of people on it. There's a lot of people who are at Johnson Beach, and to be unprotected is kind of concerning.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, we do have our guys at Perdita Key now. They're at Beach Access too. While it is far away, it's closer than it would have been if we hadn't had Perdita Key stood up.
But county officials say the need for lifeguards is imminent and the future of added protection for the Gulf Islands and National Seashore remains up in the air. Governor DeSantis unveiled a statue of George Washington in the Capitol Rotunda yesterday as a part of the upcoming 250th birthday celebration of America in 2026. Governor DeSantis.
I'm glad that we have this statue here today. You cannot conceive of this having succeeded without George Washington. He truly was first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen.
The life-size bronze statue of America's first president will be on display for a year in the state capitol. America's 250th birthday celebration will be held July 4th, 2026. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing a very cold start to the day with temperatures in the 20s, warming up in the afternoon near 50 degrees for your high sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 38. Going into Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a high near 58 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 40 degrees. Going into Sunday, mostly sunny skies with a high near 60 degrees. Small chance of rain as we go into late Sunday with a 20% overall. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thanks, Brooke. Right now, let's check in with John Pickens for traffic on the 5.
That's right. Brought to you by Anderson Subaru. No accidents to report to you right now. We're still rolling accident-free. I-10, I-110 are looking good. Seeing some minor delays on Highway 29 if you're going northbound approaching I-10. But other than that, traffic is rolling smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks, John. Right now, warming up a bit. 34 degrees in Pensacola, 33 in Gulf Breeze, and 34 in Milton at 8:34. Next news is at 9. Breaking news, of course, anytime. Let's check out what's happening in the financial world right now. This is Your Money Now. On News Radio 92.3, the Trump administration is planning a new strategy to combat soaring egg prices. Instead of wiping out whole flocks of chickens due to a single case of bird flu, it'll be more targeted.
In the last year, we killed 70 million chickens because of suspected bird flu, not because they were sick, because they were in a house that had sick birds.
Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller says we need to trust the farmers raising the chickens. They know what is best for their flocks. This comes as news broke this week the USDA accidentally fired several people who have been working to contain the bird flu outbreak. In a statement, the agency says they're trying to hire them back. At the opening bell, well, looks like not a good day on Wall Street so far. The Dow is down 233 points at 43,943. S&P 500 down 5 points at 6,112. NASDAQ is down about 13, almost 14 points at 19,976. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Said a hip, the hip, hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap. I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the week, so we're going to talk about some current events with good friends who are here in studio with me. Every Friday, we have a couple people here, and we pretend that we have beers or coffee, or in Josh's case, a wheatgrass shake. I don't know what you're...
Water, sir.
Purist. All natural. All right, fair enough. Josh Newby is the executive director of the Council on Aging of West Florida and a very close personal friend. We were in LEAP together, best class ever. Jeremy Evans is also a pretty close personal friend. We were not in LEAP together.
We were not.
He's the former chairman of the Escambia County Republican Party in Florida, and he is Clay Ingram's best friend. So, well,
not best friend, but we're very, very good friends.
I miss Clay. I do. I miss Clay. Welcome back, Jay Guys. So you could be the Jay Guys band.
Yeah, JJ. Like
Jay Giles band.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I said guys though.
We can reband.
Okay, so moving
Andrews
on.
Is
let's start with the painful stuff. Josh, you are the executive director of the Council on Aging, and how much of your funding got gutted this week?
60%. We receive 60. We have a $7 million a year budget. 60% of our funding comes through what's called the Older Americans Act, a law that has existed since Lyndon Johnson. And frozen, I guess, is the technical term. But, you know, Republicans and libertarians like to say, let's limit government, let's cut funding, let's take a chainsaw. And I agree, there's government waste. But suddenly, grandma is soiling herself in bed and not able to clean up after herself. And it's like, whoa, 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 we didn't know the government did this. We didn't know the government, you know, upheld the social order and the social contract. What do you think has been going on?
For Meals on Wheels.
Absolutely. Meals on Wheels, adult daycare, respite for caregivers. And it's not just us, right? It's Children's Home Society. It's community health. There's this entire underclass of people that are suffering, that are vulnerable, that are living, frankly, awful, awful third world country lives right here in America, in the richest country that has ever existed, and that's what you're cutting? It's I think it's horrendous. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-American. I can't believe what I'm seeing.
No, I have the same concerns. Jeremy, you're seeing it too. You know, you're not in an agency because, you know,
I know people that are in various, you know, military Department of Defense organizations.
I think locally we've seen some things about the National Park Service folks that have been let go, which makes me sad. There are areas of the government that are cutting that make me scared. And I don't know what the answer is. For decades and decades, both Republicans and Democrats have been talking about waste, fraud, and abuse as these magical words of, I can't remember the percentage, but a large percentage of how they were going to pay for the Obamacare Health Act mm-hmm. was the waste, fraud, and abuse that we find is going to pay for some significant portion of what we have. I think there's some other things that largely concern me when you're – it's almost like they're making up a plan as they go along. We want to cut waste, fraud, and abuse because we have a $40 trillion debt.
Right.
And that's a real thing. Like, we have to figure that out at some point. And you either have to cut way back on spending or find a way to significantly increase revenue.
Or both. Right.
But you know. there's going to be pain that's associated with paying off the irresponsibility of the past 50 years.
Right.
That's coming. So they're going through, they're doing all this stuff, and maybe they're finding a way to cut into this $40 trillion. And then the answer is we're going to take this savings and write it all back off to the taxpayers.
Yeah, has some Doge dividend check, right, which is insane. Yeah,
and it is...
That'll help inflation.
How does that help pay down the debt,
right,
which is the premise of what I think they're attempting to do? And instead of going in, and to be fair to them, for 50 or 60 years, they've been saying they're going to do this and haven't done this, and maybe that's what this looks like. You can't involve Congress. You can't do all these other things because it'll never get done, and this is what it looks like, and it's painful, and we have to do it. I don't know, but it's definitely painful, and I definitely don't like what I see. And at the same time, I don't think you do all this stuff
in the
and
first
proclaim
3 weeks,
yourself
right.
the king of the world
yeah.
in a fake Time magazine because Elon Musk
Trump
got
magazine.
On to Time magazine as the president.
Right.
I think that you can't do all this pain and have all the hubris at the same time.
So there's, lots of thoughts that I have. Same kinds of concerns. Look, obviously, he's taking a chainsaw. And a scalpel wouldn't be enough, or a flamethrower, as I've used the expression, but he literally had a chance on stage at CPAC the other day. So, but we've been saying this for years and nobody's actually done it. Well, now somebody's doing it. Are they doing it in the most smart way? Clearly not. Are they doing it in the most aggressive way they possibly can? Clearly they are. Are they violating the law or the Constitution in doing it? Yeah, in many places, and in other places not. Some of that dust is going to settle, but... The basic problem I have with it is that it's cut and then figure out how to live. And what does that mean in the meantime? Just like the USAID cuts is, you have people depending on this money. Is that good? No. But is the money doing good? Yeah, it really is in a lot of cases. And it's not all fraud, waste, and abuse. And like I think about the folks at the Gulf Islands National Seashore. Is it bad for them to lose their jobs? Are they unqualified? Clearly not. That's completely silly. Do I think we can probably set a tone and say, let's cut 20% of the staff this year, or let's cut 20% of the funding this year and 20% next year? Yeah, we could make it work, but you don't make it work in one day. And that's right. Where I see the big problem
in
this approach.
Well, and then you look around the country, like to take one example that just happened recently, Party City just closed their door. We cannot afford to stay open. We're mm-hmm. closing our doors.
Right.
Everybody's losing their. Doesn't mean you're not a good employee, bad employee. That's what private businesses are having to do. Private businesses are struggling with figuring out, we want our employees to come back to work. What does that look like? I know Navy Federal's been having this discussion for years. They have this
right.
giant complex that builds employee engagement. They want employees to come back to work. Should the federal government be any different than what's going on in private businesses across the country?
Mm-hmm.
And what are these private businesses doing when companies that want to have people come back to work, they say no? Should the government be any different than that? I don't necessarily believe so, but how do you do that? You just don't come in on day one and say this
and,
or that.
You know, what we all know from overall analysis is that stable systems mm-hmm. have a value in just being stable. Even if they're a mess, the stable mess is still stable. Mm-hmm. Unstable systems are chaos and can be a real problem. Now, look, I can see the economic argument. Let's shed a bunch of GDP non-producing parts of the economy. Let's fire a bunch of people, which is certainly what he's doing. Let's fire them all. Let's drop let's increase the supply of labor. That drops the price.
Let's rehire a quarter of them or so back.
Well, okay, but you're putting massive people out into the labor market. That's going to drive down the cost of labor. Okay, people are going to get cheaper jobs, but they're going to be into GDP producing occupations now. We're actually going to increase value for the whole society. Maybe in a year or two, this looks like a genius move, but I'll tell you right now, it looks like utter chaos and catastrophe.
Well, and then a lot of these people are being put on administrative leave, which means that they're getting paid for doing nothing while they figure it out.
Right, which is the worst of all worlds.
You have the tariffs, which is a whole nother complication to the economic, the otherwise ideal economic system that you've proposed, which is driving down the cost of labor. Mm-hmm. But humans like stability.
And remember, driving down the cost of labor means driving down the cost of goods and services, which will affect the price of things at the store. If it works that way.
But it's going right back up via the tariffs, right?
That's the imported things if we can't drive those people to come into the United States and manufacture. I mean, it's a dramatic and drastic total reshuffling of the economic order, starting with the government.
And there's a very, very scary, to me, there's a very, very scary part of this about the fundamental function of our government of checks and balances that we are completely eliminating. Is Congress ineffective? Yes. But do I want to get a newly elected president and have them snapping their fingers, completely changing the way that our government works? I don't know that fundamentally, that scares me.
What we've always said, and is the right analysis of the Constitution, it's designed to be slow and do little.
Yeah.
It's supposed to go slow and do little. The scariest thing about a government is whenever it's fast, because fast can be fast successes and fast can be fast total disasters. We've got a very fast government right now, and that itself is problematic. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110, looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
So, yeah, I see a lot of things I love. I see a lot of things that horrify me. I'll be honest, we voted for this. You can't be surprised.
We'll
see when the dust settles in a year. Where are we, you know?
To yours and Jeremy's point, Republicans especially have been talking about this for decades.
That's right.
I mean, as long as I've been alive, going back to Reagan, which, you know, is before I've been alive, do they not have a plan? I mean, surely someone, the Heritage Foundation, the Center for American Prosperity or whatever it is, has
they do for some parts
reasonable cuts.
Yeah.
Why is that plan not being followed? Why are we bringing Elon Musk in, who knows nothing about American governance, who knows nothing about consensus building, who knows nothing about budget? You can't say the Tesla market cap is realistic. Why?
Well, I guess my question is why. I think the answer is you can only really gut the pig fast, is their argument, is you can't drain the swamp slowly. And we're going to kill it all. And then we're going to start regrowing. I mean, that's Trump's argument, you know, is that if you give them time, they'll adjust and the fraud will stick around, or the people will find a way to defend themselves.
Shouldn't we do a measure twice, cut once?
Well, that's my approach, but I didn't get elected president.
Thank you, Andrew.
I mean, I think that it is possible that this is not as chaotic as it seems.
Right.
That there was a plan of people. President Trump was president for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
People that were around him were very aware of what was happening in the government that have stuck with him for the past however many years. And so this could be the plan of some of those organizations and some of those people that you were talking about. It looks chaotic to us on the outside because we don't know what the plan is, but this could very easily be well more thought out than we ever thought, because I think going in on day one, they knew where they were going.
Right. And with all of the, I mean, look at, we talked about how he was not the Project 2025 guy in several ways, but he is clearly following it in many of their exact proposals. And the Heritage Foundation has had time to work this stuff out and figure out what to do. And I think they are. I mean, I think it looks like chaos, and it's probably much less of a chaos than it really looks like. And look, it's happening. I've criticized Stephen Miller, who came on yesterday on the White House press conference and said, you know, you people don't understand. President was elected. He can basically do what the people elected him to do. Well, that's not true. There's a whole constitution and checks and balances of a system of government that are designed to prevent any one person from doing whatever they want to do. And that's all being challenged right now. That's why you have court case after court case after court case. And again, we're going to have to see what winds up happening. But in the meantime, it is absolutely a bloodbath. And it's not just the kind of thing that's happening to people somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
It is affecting everybody at every level. And I hate to say it this way, but I really am of the opinion that time will tell whether this works out for good or ill. But right now, there's a lot of ill happening. Yeah. I'll say that. Other issues locally. One of the things that we've been talking about quite a bit is the Chappie James Monument Memorial, whatever you want to call it. The F4 Phantom, the flag, the statue. Yesterday got almost funded. I mean, it's contingency funded based on a study from the Haas Center about it being a tourism-related thing and it actually benefiting tourism. But they got an extra, not quite $1 million to put them over the line to actually get it done. I love this project. Is it tourism related money?
No, it's not. And then even if you listen to the people like Chris Dosef, who is the president of the foundation or whatever chair,
yeah,
of the,
spokesman
the chair
for
of the
sure, yeah, right.
What his argument for it being tourism was, it would be somewhere people who come here for military reunions can go to. Not it's going to draw those people here for their military mm-hmm. reunions. It is a place for them to go to. I think it should be funded. I think it should be something as a community that we fund. I don't think it should come from tourism dollars because I don't think it's a tourism I think the last time that I was, or one of the last times I was here, they were talking about making the America's
the flag.
Biggest flag
oh, yeah.
in Santa Rosa County.
Yeah,
and I think that that's a bigger tourism draw than a Chappie James statue, but neither of them are tourism draws.
So Pam Childers surprised me yesterday. She came out and said that she approves the idea under, because she's ultimately the first layer of defense against misappropriations of TDT money. And she said it's an outdoor museum and a museum is in the statue.
No.
Is it a single? I think it is a single feature museum. If you've got an informational plaque, if you've got, Chappie James, it's not just a flag. I see it as a single display museum. But that is definitely shoehorning it into the statue.
Yes.
For sure. Does it draw tourists here? Probably no, but is it a placemaking thing that enhances our tourism? Absolutely, yes. Just like the water tower being painted or the beach ball being painted.
No,
I just don't know that those are TDT money things.
Yeah, exactly. No, my belief is that for, 20, 30 years, we needed to address the Civic Center. We need to take the TDC money and we need to, Pensacon just happened this weekend,
yep.
which is, it is proven to be a tourism draw. You try to have any kind of event here, there's not a hotel downtown Pensacola that can really host anything. There's none of those. You can go to the Hilton at the beach is the best place to do it. And there's nothing for nothing like that here.
Right.
And we should, all the TDC things should be focused on what is it that we want to do? Because every idea that we come up with gets shot down by some sect of Pensacola hates it, and they get enough power to shoot it down. And then you end up spending little bits of money on projects like this, and then the money you need for a big project that would actually draw tourism in, it's not there.
Correct.
That being said, sign me up for my tax dollars going to pay for this thing, because I think that it's valuable, not as a tourism project,
but just as a thing itself.
For our community to say, this happened here, we loved it, and maybe you build like a park of many of the great Pensacola folks who, whether they be, the Emmett Smiths of the world or non-athletes or, people that came from here that have made a difference in our community, and we want to be proud of this area that we go to commemorate our local heroes.
It's one of the things I remember when we were having the conversation about the Galvez statue and talking with Mayor Hayward about mm-hmm. this. And, I want more statues. I want black history heroes, I want white history heroes, I want more history, I want more cool things, I want the ability to go around town and do scavenger hunts for the mural art and for the mm-hmm. statue and for the plaque, and like make it a real historical celebration kind of destination. I favor more of that. Before we move on, Josh, any thoughts about the Chappie James Memorial?
I agree 100%. I think we should stop doling out pennies and dimes and actually save up that tourism money for something that will actually bring people here. I mean, how long has the tech park been vacant?
Oh man.
Not much longer, apparently.
Oh, did you see? I don't know if you saw the P&J story about how we got three rumored long distance offers for maybe something.
Was it Space Florida for about 10 years, right?
It's just, look, it's got to be closer to a deal before I even remotely take interest. And right now it's very much of a, well, we got a phone call,
Like, okay. Is there a point where it's worth just can we pay the
$2
million? Just pay the
$2 million. For 10-year-old technology or whatever it is. I mean, is that stuff even usable anymore, whatever they built it with?
Pay the $2 million back and parcel it out. At this point, parcel the land out.
Yeah, you'd get more from tax revenue.
Yeah.
What we should do? We should put the Escambia County Commission in charge of it.
They can, you know, honestly, I have a theory. This whole Chappie James thing, they just wanted a win.
They just something.
Yeah.
Give us something we can say yes to.
So, yeah, we need some good coverage.
Well, we can get, you know, the Tech Park can become as quick a turnaround as OLF8. You know, it'll be fantastic. No problems. Everything's wonderful. Switching topics. Actually, John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
No accidents to let you know about. I-10, I-1, and even 98 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Sure, I'm going to get hate texts here shortly. You know, because they're just, Andrew, why? Well, you know, this is what people think. Okay, I have a slightly off topic, but I want to get your opinion. In a neighborhood close to where I live, Oakfield Terrace, which is like Sarah between Hancock and Burgess, okay, between West Florida High School and Brown Barge, they're doing a massive stormwater project. Part of the stormwater project is there's a park in there that has a bunch of trees, and it has been detreed largely, not on the perimeter, but detreed, turned into a giant hole in the ground, which Lumen May talked about yesterday in their conversation about stormwater management, and they actually put off making a decision about this until they can have more discussion about it. It's ugly. It's very much not a park anymore. My own personal objection is that we're going to put a big old chain link fence around it and turn it into the mobile home park perimeter. And trust me, I love mobile home parks, but it's going to trash up the place because we have these chain link fences that we put around all of our holes in the ground, all of our stormwater ponds. We bike Baldwin County right now. We're all over Alberta and Foley and all that area. They don't put chain link fences around their storm ponds. They're amenities. They have fountains. They're pretty. They have ducks. You can wander down to the shoreline.
Look at Admiral Mason Park.
Yeah.
Right?
Why do we put these horribly ugly chain link fences around these? Well, it's for safety. We don't put chain link fences around the Gulf or the Bay or Blackwater. We have open water all over the place. What's the problem? Am I missing something?
That's a great point. And I mean, Ashton Hayward, you know, trumpeted Admiral Mason Park as the way you do stormwater.
Right.
And I mean, that is an amenity. I bike there all the time.
Water's pretty. We love water. Water,
correct.
You can grow things.
Ducks.
You can see
things,
wildlife.
Absolutely.
Right.
Make it an amenity. I don't know. Was there a lawsuit at some point? Did some kid get hurt?
It has to do with the grade of the slope of the side. Like for my own personal neighborhood, we don't have a fence around it, but I know for a lot of them they do. And it, even if it doesn't look horrible at the beginning, in 5 years it always looks horrible.
Is that a count? Is that a state?
It's
statute?
County. No, it's county. Because in South Florida, John, they don't do it this way.
Okay.
We don't have to do it this way.
The county ordinance on fences is the bane of my existence.
Oh, interesting. do tell.
I live on Scenic Highway, and there's apparently a old code that you can't have a fence on your property if you live on Scenic Highway.
Oh.
But there's nobody that enforces it.
Okay.
So the only way that it gets enforced is if you actually try to pull a permit to build a fence and do it the proper way, and then they tell you no, and then if you build a fence since you were told no, you can be fined a significant amount of money. But if your next door neighbor builds a fence
without permission,
they won't do anything. And then the thing that you're talking about here, it makes it hard to maintain them if they have fences around them.
Yes.
And I think that at some point, if we're worried about children falling down the thing, at some point parents are responsible for their children and children are responsible for themselves. And the greater good is just maintaining the property. And
when we bike around and I see all these neighborhoods and subdivisions where they have incorporated their stormwater design, their ponds, into the aesthetic of the subdivision, and it always looks amazing. And then I drive around Escambia County and it always looks like trash. That part of it.
Is it you mentioned the grade. If you have a more extreme grade, obviously you're able to maximize a smaller portion of
land.
That's
right. That's the argument.
So is that what it is? It's an inventory thing? We just don't have enough space
I think it's partially that and partially the safety, right? We're just going to prevent anybody from getting hurt or, you know, whatever, which there's now also other technology, I guess, for more deeper use of, like, I don't know, water chimneys and things like that that don't take as much footprint away. But
it's good for sledding when it snows.
For our next one in 50 years,
exactly.
Or whatever we have. All right. Well, it's a pet peeve. It's a little thing.
You're right.
But I see us sort of failing to look at some of the little things that have an overall value. And again, I happen to be all over Baldwin County, and their manhole covers are decorative.
Yeah.
And it's neat.
Right.
It's not the best thing in the whole wide world,
you're
but
right.
it's little things like that that make a community overall, you know, it's like painting the corners of the house right makes the house look different overall. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I see, and yeah. I think we can do better.
Agree. You go somewhere, Asheville,
yes,
you know, whatever, and you don't. It feels different.
Yep.
You don't know why, but that's why it feels different.
It's all those.
It's intentional.
All the little things, yep. And if you do a bunch of these little things the right way or the better way, then overall, Jeremy, Josh, thanks for the time.
Thank you.